Hello, everyone, and welcome back to DASCO Up for Discussion, where we talk about all things Down syndrome. I'm your host, Sarah Sewell, and joining me is Kathy Trout. Welcome back, Kathy.
Hello.
Today, we're going to talk about medical diagnoses in the Down syndrome community. Now, this episode is not meant to scare you, but rather to empower you with information. We're here to help you understand what to watch for and how to better support your loved ones with Down syndrome through their lives.
That's right. As part of understanding these medical needs means staying updated on the latest research. One exciting program doing just that is called the INCLUDE program, which stands for the Investigation of Co-Occurring Conditions Across the Lifespan of to Understanding Down Syndrome.
So the INCLUDE project was launched in 2018 at the direction of Congress. It's all about conducting research on critical health and quality of life needs for individuals with Down syndrome. Since its launch, the INCLUDE project has supported vital work advancing research in both Down syndrome itself and related conditions that impact individuals with Down syndrome.
So through this project, researchers are looking at conditions that affect not only Down syndrome community, but the general population, so such as Alzheimer's disease, dementia, autism, cataracts, celiac disease, congenital heart disease, diabetes, you name it. It's important to know that individuals with Down syndrome have a higher incidence of some chronic or life-threatening conditions. But they are also surprisingly protected from other conditions. That's why this research is so important. It's basically to help us understand these patterns and how to address them.
Another key part is ensuring that individuals with Down syndrome are included in clinical trials. Historically, this has not happened, but it's essential in order to properly study and address these diseases and conditions that disproportionately impact them.
That's why the INCLUDE project is considered such an effective and progressive step forward in Down syndrome research. It's helping researchers discover more about the unique needs of individuals with Down syndrome and is supporting clinical trials that can lead to better treatment and care options.
So as we talk about these many medical diagnoses today, just know there is hope, there is a growing community of researchers and advocates working tirelessly to improve both the health and outcomes and quality of life for individuals with Down syndrome. And with that, let's get down to the basics. So Kathy, you and I both have kind of had a lot of medical conditions with both of our girls. I know we on another previous episode, listeners, we did talk about our girls undergoing open heart surgery, which is common for individuals with Down syndrome. I think the research state that it's like 50%, but I think it's more because almost every new baby that we get there, they have some type of hole in their heart or some type of heart defect. So with that being said, just, what was your experience in diagnosing the heart condition? How did you go about that?
So ours was diagnosed at birth. Her Apgar was a 9.5 and then very quickly within the first couple of hours, she was transferred to the NICU. She was having some breathing issues, and they were able to, figure out there was a heart issue. She had an ASD, a VSD, and a PDA, so all heart conditions, and had to have surgery within. She was 5 weeks old when she had heart surgery.
Yeah. Kirsten, the same. They didn't detect hers right at birth. It was a couple of weeks later, but her hole was so large they couldn't hear the murmur, and she had an ASD, a VSD, and a PDA valve that didn't close. So pretty similar. And, you know, I share that with families because I always say, just get the heart check, just double check and make sure. And actually we were joking on another episode the other day with Eileen that's coming up that, we wish everybody could just have our kids could just be scanned
from head to toe
and just, you know, check everything, you know, to make sure it's all there and it's all working properly. And course, that's expensive, yeah. and that's not going to happen. But as we talk through medical conditions, you know, it's kind of important to note that, you know, it is expected that our kids will spend some time in the hospital. That's kind of known. If they are not, you're right. very fortunate.
It's almost more rare if they don't.
Right. Correct. And not to scare anybody, but just to prepare that you're probably going to make some ER visits. Well,
and I do think it's great to be more proactive.
Yeah.
Because then that way, you know, you can start looking for these things that if there are problems, like right. Addie at a very young age had to have her tear ducts probed. Because she was constantly had that watery eye.
Yes.
And I've noticed a lot of the kids that have come in to the DASCO, they all have, you know, a lot of them have that same problem. She had hearing issues.
Same. Kirsten had those.
And all those things. Addie hasn't had any thyroid issue, which I do know is also a big issue within our community. I just think it's so important to check it because then you can do some things proactively.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things I kick myself about all the time is I wish that we had done better with the celiac, because both of our kids have
right.
recently, well, I say recently, within the last 2 years been diagnosed with celiac. And I think I would have done things differently for her if I had known that she had celiac or, you know. So I really think it's so important to be proactive and educate yourself on what are some of the things that might be done, not to be worried about it or not to stress about it, but just to say, hey, have you checked this kind of thing.
Right. So. I know, and on the podcast that's coming up with Eileen with Sooner Start, we talk about, you know, first 3 months, so important. Get those hearing.
Absolutely.
Those ears checked. And, you know, Kirsten had a lot of fluid and she had eustachian tube dysfunction. I love how one of her ENTs explained it to me. And, you know, our kids do have to have their tonsils removed, their adenoids removed.
Addie did that, yep.
Kirsten had her lingual tonsils removed, which are tonsils underneath her tongue. Didn't even know that was a thing. So that her tongue would sit further down in her palate so it wouldn't fall to the back of her throat, which was causing her to have sleep apnea. And it worked. So her tongue
which
does
sit. Which is another thing that a lot of our kids have. But
yes.
Go ahead,
so just to kind of go through the conditions that we kind of know of, and we'll post a link about this, is, you know, 50%, and some of these statistics are not accurate, so don't quote me on all these, but this is just from some of the things that I talk about in my talks. 50% of our individuals with Down syndrome will have heart defects. 72% have hearing issues. They also develop autoimmune diseases of all kinds, so just making sure you're checking for those. You know, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or celiac is an autoimmune disease. Some of those things are hard to diagnose and hard to check for. Every year, I always push for Kirsten to have just a CBC plant panel. Just check her blood. Our kids are going to always have low white cell counts, and we learned this at the convention last year. And the reason for that is if they've had open heart surgery, they remove their thymus gland, which causes their white cell count to always remain in that low category. But other things are, you know, alopecia is prevalent amongst our community.
Vision problems.
Vision issues, of course. And then just the low muscle tone, we all know that. They all have it. Some have better muscle tone than others.
Yeah, Kirsten doesn't have a lot of it, really.
No.
She is a little bit, she's got a lot of very good balance and control, which typically doesn't go along with, because Addie does not. She is very hypertonic.
I attribute that to horseback riding, that might be for another.
But Addie did it too. Addie did horseback riding too, but she didn't stick with it as long as Kirsten did. That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. A lot of these things and these conditions that our kids get, if you really pour in that early intervention. Or just consistent intervention, it helps tremendously.
And we have a list, so we're happy to share that, you know, for our new parents out there that you're going to the pediatrician for the first time. You're like, what do I do? What do I ask for? Just ask that these top things be checked periodically or annually. I mean, it's as simple as a blood test, and it doesn't have to be so invasive as a biopsy with celiac.
Or a scope
celiac does, or surgery. But just know that, you know, most of our kids are going to have a set of ear tubes. I think Kirsten's had I stopped counting after 20.
Oh, gosh, no. Addie's only had 7.
Yeah, she's had quite a few. They just kept falling out. Yeah, same. And then we would get new T-tubes, and then those would fall out. And now she doesn't have any, so her ears have been pretty healthy the last few years. So some of these conditions, they grow out of.
Yes.
She did have her tonsils and adenoids removed. How about Addie?
Yeah, Addie's had her tonsils and adenoids.
Yeah, Kirsten had clogged tear ducts.
Yes, Addie had that.
So I attribute that because of the flat facial structure. And we massaged them. That didn't work, so she had to have the tubes in. She actually had to have 3 of those because one fell out and we had to redo the little stent. Simple, easy procedure.
Were too small to actually put the tube in, so they just probed them while they were in there, and that did the trick for her.
That just pushed it on through or opened up that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But one of the ENT doctors once, he said, children with Down syndrome have this small skeletal structure. And because of that, that just goes with, you know, having Down syndrome. But then all of their organs are crammed into this small skeletal structure, and their organs all grow the same. So you have this small skeletal structure with everything just packed in there. And he said, that's why we've got to remove the tonsils and the adenoids so they can breathe and just make room for all the other things. And that kind of made sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, I get it.
Well, same with their tongue. A lot of people will say that they have a bigger tongue, and it's not that they have a bigger tongue. It's that the mouth is smaller, the structure of it is smaller. And then that goes to a lot of our kids, their tongues will protrude a lot. And that's that one, it's a bigger, it's a average size tongue and a smaller mouth. But their muscle tone, a tongue is a muscle. Mm-hmm. So they've got to work that muscle to get it to, I remember we constantly, one of our speech therapists was like, when you see her tongue out, you just touch it and say, tongue in, tongue in. And she doesn't, if she's really tired, she will sit with her tongue out. But mostly Addie never has her tongue out anymore.
I know our girls don't have seizures, but I know that is something also to watch out for. And, you know, just make sure your pediatrician's aware of signs for seizures. But more than likely, unfortunately, your child's going to have some type of medical procedure.
Yeah.
Might just be minor, like tubes or tonsillectomy or adenoids, but not always are those minor for our kids. It's a big deal, and I don't mean to lessen that by any means, because any procedure when our kids are being put under is major. And that even goes for some of our continued health care. A lot of our kids have to be put under for dental cleanings.
Well, that's a good point. I was going to say the dental. A lot of kids, like Addie is missing some teeth. She's just never, they're never going to grow.
Right.
And that's good in some ways, because then her mouth has more room for her teeth to grow and maybe not have to have braces. But it can also be bad because that they may not have enough to chew and to do the things that are needed.
Right, and articulate speech and things like that. And we can talk about this on another episode as far as the medical costs, but I just encourage everybody, that's why it's so important for you to be on the waiver so that our kids have Medicaid, whether that's your primary or secondary insurance. But because our kids have a lot of medical issues, it is imperative that you are on Medicaid. I didn't have it the first 15 years of Kirsten's life, and gosh, I sure wish we did. Because it would have saved us a lot of out-of-pocket expenses that we had with all of her 20-plus ear tubes, for sure. But, you know, not to scare anybody, but just to prepare you to think your child might have to undergo some type of medical procedure. I'll kind of share the story now about our celiac diagnosis. That was fun, wasn't it?
Was it?
I think it took me 2 years to have the GI doctors finally test her.
I think I actually got the diagnosis before you got the diagnosis, but you started way before I did. Yeah.
So interesting story. So Kirsten had been having like issues with being impacted and just not feeling great and wasn't eating and lost a lot of weight. And then we kind of battled through this, and her inflammation markers were always high. So what's going on? There's inflammation somewhere in her body. But her gluten panel was not all that elevated, just a little bit. And so that's why they wouldn't, and I don't know if y'all are familiar with celiac disease, but you have to have the biopsy for the confirmation. And I actually started doing some research and reading about celiac, and because of the INCLUDE project that we just discussed earlier in this episode, the research that had been done is there's a link between females who have gone through puberty and hypothyroidism are developing celiac disease, you know, in that preteen or teenage years. And I thought, oh gosh, Kirsten has, you know, two of those things, plus, you know, she has trisomy 21. And I started really asking, like, could she have celiac disease? No, we're just going to kind of watch it. And then you started having gut issues with Addie. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, she started having actually some vasovagal responses where the pain was so bad that she would pass out from it.
Yeah.
And so we kept going and kept going back to the doctor. And finally, when Kirsten was going through all that, I said, Do you think we should have her tested for celiac? So they did the blood test initially, and the markers were very high. So then we did the scope. We had to do the scope.
Yeah.
And the biopsy. Because, again, that's how the only way they will confirm the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And she did have celiac.
Yeah, you got a biopsy before we did.
Right.
And then when we finally got scheduled for a biopsy that I really had to advocate for, Kirsten had H. pylori.
Yeah.
So we had to get the intestine under control before they could even think about the gluten allergy, which then took another year for them to diagnose her.
And you can't be not eating gluten.
Right.
And then get the diagnosis because it will give you a false negative.
Right.
So unfortunately they have to keep eating gluten. Keep having sick. The symptoms and in order to get the test.
And Kirsten's symptoms were completely different.
Within Addie's.
From Addie's.
Completely different.
And that's what I keep telling everybody. You know, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And especially kids with Down syndrome, they just respond differently to every medical situation. Yeah. Kirsten never really complained that her stomach hurt, but she was constipated, which that's not... Constipation isn't celiac. It's usually the reverse. She just didn't want to eat. I think there was some just upsetness that she had, but she couldn't really tell me where anything hurt. So, you know.
And she kept saying it was in her back sometimes when she
would
say
that. Yeah, and they were treating her for GERD.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think there's something more than just GERD for this child. But this all started because I took her to the endocrinologist. And I just happened to say, he's like, well, is there anything else you're concerned about? And I said, well, she just has this weird cough that she does all the time. And it was just kind of a gassy all the time. Yeah. And he was like, oh, well, let's get her with GI. And maybe she just has like esophagitis, just some inflammation in the esophagus. I'm thinking, okay, no big deal. So that led from us, you know, going through all this blood work to then being diagnosed with H. pylori to then having to go through some other issues with her related to not being sick and losing weight. And then she had a dental procedure, and the kid literally lived on ICs for a month. Yeah. I could not get her to eat. And then her inflammation markers went way back again after she did not have the H. pylori anymore, because they're thinking, well, it's the infection in her gut. That's why. And then finally her celiac gluten panel started elevating just a little bit, not very much. For them to think, oh, let's do a biopsy. It wasn't until a year later that they said, well, they're maybe at a level that we should just maybe do the biopsy to just see. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, now she's so severe. She can't touch it. She can't eat it. She can't inhale it.
Yeah. One really good point about all of that is trust your gut. If you think there's something, if you think there's something wrong, keep trying to find out, because there may not be. But I mean, if you think there's something wrong, there probably is.
Well, and Kirsten, like, because she said her back hurt. Well, obviously she was having so many other things too. She couldn't pinpoint, like, it's the acid reflux. Yeah. And we did a HIDA scan to make sure that it wasn't her gallbladder. Which, by the way, I've never known really anybody to say that they have gallbladder disease that have Down syndrome. So yeah. I think that's one thing I'm not sure that is very common amongst our group. The gallbladders tends to function pretty well.
So when I was looking up for this podcast and I was trying to think of all the things that Addie has had of all the common things, one of the things during some research that I didn't notice a bunch, which I was kind of shocked, is foot. And I feel like almost every one of our kids have, their feet, like, really dry, crusty. They have their toenails are a little off, you know. That, and then dandruff.
It's like seborrheic dermatitis.
Yes. It's feet and I was surprised. And not only do they have, like topical issues with their feet, but, like, their ankles pronate. So they have a lot of, structural issues. Which can cause arthritis, which can cause some knee pain. So if you have your kid, you know, if your kids are wearing braces early on, it helps with all of that stuff.
Right.
So, but I was surprised that the feet.
Yeah,
didn't mention
and
it.
I'm glad you mentioned the skin conditions, because I remember Kirsten, I think, she was getting ready to go through puberty. She was like 11, 12, and she started getting this funky rash in her head. But it wasn't a rash. It was seborrheic dermatitis. And I finally took her to the dermatologist, and I'm not kidding you, I think we've tried 20 different shampoos. Some that were over the counter, some that were prescribed, and I think finally we have a really good treatment. So if you would like that, I'm happy to share, because it is amazing. And nobody wants flakiness on your clothes, and especially our adults that are trying to get jobs.
We don't have
all that laying on them. And as long as you can get it under control, it's never going to go away. But you can
see Addie does not have that at all. Now, a feet issue, that's another thing. But she does not have the...
Kirsten doesn't have the
feet. We actually got back from the podiatrist this morning where she says she goes to her torture doctor.
Kirsten doesn't have the feet condition.
Yeah.
But she has the seborrheic dermatitis. And, you know, unfortunately, it's in her scalp. And it can get behind her ears, and then it's also in her vaginal area. But as long as we maintain it and use the creams and the shampoos and the soaps, we're good. I had to make sure all those things were gluten-free, though, first.
Yeah.
Because there's gluten in all of those things. So
there's,
when we say they can't touch it, inhale it, or eat it, that means lotions, soaps,
makeup,
they can't have any of that on their skin. Because it absorbs through that. And just recently, because Kirsten's inflammation markers are not coming down, we've had to see a rheumatologist. So I know that's kind of a new thing for us, and I don't have any experience other than, you know, they're monitoring her, and they have started her on some medication to help with that. And I think she is feeling better. She's definitely not sleeping, and she doesn't have those dark circles under her eyes. She doesn't seem to be as tired. But, you know, every time I went in, they were like, you know, checking her joints to see if they're swollen. They are not. They were checking to see if she had any redness in her joints. She does not. But her blood work, her panels for RA are really high.
Mm.
So, like I said, it doesn't always present itself on the external side. It's more internal. And as I mentioned to her teachers, I said, oh, she looks great on the outside, but on the inside, she's not so great. We're kind of a hot mess.
And I think our kids, they either have a higher pain tolerance or they can't verbalize it a lot.
Right.
We had a kid that was coming to the SAC that actually had his behavior was starting to digress. And he had an ear infection.
Yes.
And he couldn't tell us because he couldn't get the words out, or couldn't figure it out, for whatever reason wasn't telling us. And maybe it wasn't hurting. He was just irritated. But once they figured that out, his behavior came back. So some of these ailments can also result in some behavior issues, that unwanted behavior issues.
That's where you're going back to, you know, follow your gut.
Yeah.
Because if your kids are acting differently or
if there's
out of
a change,
sorts, yeah, then it's probably something medical. And, you know, I know our kids do not like to have their blood drawn. That's a whole another
mine.
Issue.
Mine loves it now. She's all, sign her
Kirsten's
up.
Kirsten's better now, but I've heard so many parents struggle with that. And
yes,
I don't
you're
have
right.
a good answer, because I've been there, we've been down the road where it took 4 hours to get 5 vials
of blood.
We used
to, but not anymore.
And it took like 3 nurses to hold her down. And she's not very big, but boy, she's feisty. So it's just necessary. So I would say your younger ones, start early with a coping mechanism to deal with that, because your child is going to have their blood drawn. I mean, they took 17 vials of blood from Kirsten just 2 weeks ago because of the whole RA stuff. So it's just that's just our walk of life. There's nothing we can change about it. But gosh, I'm so thankful that we do have those blood tests, because even several years ago, there wasn't a blood test
for celiac. Right.
And they just kind of had to go off of the symptoms that the person was experiencing.
Right.
But I think somebody told me blood work changes every 24 hours. Scans and x-rays are like 6 weeks. So if your child's having an ultrasound and they're scanning the spleen or or any organs and they're enlarged, because Kirsten's had liver enlargement as well, it'll take 6 weeks for that organ to go back to normal once it's being treated. But again, so thankful that we have people who are advocating for us and doing all the research and finally letting our kids be part of those clinical trials, because
otherwise, that's so important.
I don't know where we would be in our medical research. And I do want to throw out there for those of you that are listening that have female adults, there are new female guidelines that just came out.
Oh, yes, right.
For women's health, and that's for any adult, so 18 and up, and there's just specific things about, you know, when should they get mammograms and how often should they get pap smears. But there's also some information on birth control, whatever fits your family values or what's best for our kids. But again, something you should always talk to your provider about. But those are new as just far as kind of what to look for. Because I did learn this in a session. Individuals with Down syndrome, they do age at a rapid pace than the typical human being. And because of that, they have found that the autoimmune system never shuts off. So it's going on and on and on and on. Ours will kick in when we have a cold virus. Yeah, and it'll fight it off. Theirs is on all the time. So imagine a car running all the time.
Yeah.
And it's eventually going to die out.
I guess.
Yeah. So they figure. So how do we slow down that autoimmune system? So they're now recommending that some of our individuals start taking JAK inhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some underlying health implications with taking them, and you really need to check with your provider about that.
Yeah, and I thought if you have had open heart surgery, is there something about that?
There's certain ones you're not supposed to take.
Okay.
And I just heard that from one of Kirsten's physicians. Like, you just really, if you're going to start her on those, make sure they know she's had open heart surgery. But with that being said, that's what's attributing, they think, to the aging faster, so to speak. But the lifespan of an individual with Down syndrome was well into the 60s and 70s. So I don't expect that to decrease by any means. But we know that there are lots of preventative healthcare measures now. And we just tell everybody out there, check, check, check.
Yeah, do a lot of screenings.
Ask your doctor. Ask us. You know, there's a lot of us have been down this road, and we kind of know what to expect at this point. But Kathy and I are kind of in the same spot right now, so we don't really know what to expect in the adult aging so much.
Right.
And that's even changed medically with research that's been developed. But there are lots of resources. The Global Down Syndrome Foundation has a lot of research articles out there that you can read about that are really helpful. And then the Adult Down Syndrome Clinic in Chicago, they have a lot of different visuals and research that you can read about in more of the adult care. But it makes me happy.
Yeah.
So
where is it? Can't you print off like a list of things that they should be screened? What is it? The screening.
The checklist.
Yes.
Yeah. We have it on our website. We'll put it on there.
Because I think that's important.
It's by age.
And especially if you are going to a doctor or a pediatrician that isn't as familiar with Down syndrome, it's important to. I don't think. I mean, my doctor was not offended when I took the list to him to say, "Hey, these are things we need to watch for. Mm-hmm. So, and then it'll just give them an idea, him or her, an idea of things that would be something we should probably check down the road, or if they're having problems in mm-hmm. an area, oh, this might be it, kind mm-hmm. of a thing. So,
and I think when Kirsten was little, I didn't know what I didn't know.
Oh, amen.
So yeah. I think part of it is she had a runny nose. Okay, it's just typical cold. And some of it
is. A lot of it is, yeah.
But then some of it's not. So I had to learn that I needed to ask a little more questions or ask for some more testing, even though it was maybe something minor.
Yeah.
It could always lead to something larger. I mean, our kids are prone to get pneumonia.
Their immune systems are low, or, you know, some of them yeah. are lower than the average adult or yep. child.
So. And, you know, there are great yep. medicines out there to help with those things. Yep. I did this a few years ago, and I can recommend it, but there is that DS Connect through the...
Oh, yeah, I did it too. Yeah.
Through the Boston Children's Hospital.
Yeah, I would recommend doing it early on.
Yes.
We did it when our kids were older and had yes. already had a bunch of the issues or not had, you know, and my recommendation on that would be if I had another kid with Down syndrome, I'd be starting from the beginning.
Exactly.
And doing it at the beginning.
So basically,
it gives you better ideas.
What that is you put in all your child's information from mental health to physical health, and it kind of does this assessment. And then it gives you a list of here's the things you should ask the doctor for. But it also prints out a list to give to the doctor.
Right.
Like, here's what you should check for based on, you know, this screening. And then I sent that to my pediatrician yeah. right away. And they were like, called me within an hour and said, okay, would you like to check for blah, 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 blah. And I was like, you know, maybe we should.
Because
mm-hmm. she's getting older and, you know, what if this level is higher?
Yeah.
What if she is starting to experience some mental health disorders? I want to get on top of it now so we can learn what to do before it becomes a bigger issue.
All right.
And I think that's really, you know, just you know your child best.
Yeah,
and
just staying on top of it.
Staying on top of it.
And I mean, it's funny because relatively, Addie's very healthy. She swims every day. She, you know... She really is relatively mm-hmm. healthy. We're not at the doctor very often. I haven't seen our doctor
right.
in almost a year, and you know, we're going this Friday for a physical. But I mean, other than that, she's relatively healthy. So
yeah,
she has had some things, but
yeah, same overall. With Kirsten. And I mean, she always bounces back really fast and
right.
gets right back on top of it. And you know, now that we've got her thyroid under control and we're
yeah.
getting the rheumatology things under control, she. Let me tell you, it's not slowing her down.
Yeah.
And you'll exactly. notice that. It's not going to slow your kids down. They will have a major ear infection or strep throat and be running around like this.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. And you and I would be laying on the bed sick and moaning for, you know, all the pain. And
for my husband, anyway. I don't know about I, but...
yeah, but... They do. They just bounce back so great and don't always experience the pain. That's why sometimes it is kind of difficult
yeah.
to diagnose. But behaviors might change,
yes,
like you mentioned
exactly.
earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, Kathy, you have anything else?
I think we talked about a lot
we
of
We talked
the
about, I think, all,
our kids
all the
have.
Areas,
yeah.
I think. And just know that... if there is a topic that you'd like for us to discuss, or if there is a medical issue that your child has that, you know, maybe we're not aware of, let us know so I can add that to the list so that it will, you know, be part of what other people might be experiencing. And we just hope you enjoy our episode and the research that's occurring in Down syndrome. And please stay tuned. We have more important conversations ahead.
And we want to hear from you. So if you have any questions, ideas, topics, we would love to cover anything that you guys want us to talk about or look up or find more information about. You can email us at info@dsaco.org or visit our website at dsaco.org.
And I would be remiss if I did not say please subscribe so that you never miss one of our episodes. And if you found this conversation helpful, please share it with a friend or a family member because the more we can spread awareness, the stronger our community becomes. But thank you all for joining us for this episode of DASCO Up for Discussion. We can't wait to continue this journey with you. And until next time, remember, every step forward is a step toward a more inclusive world. Thank you all.
Thank you.